We welcome your car calls right now at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Now, when Gordon is here, always a popular program, I advise you to call early. Sooner rather than later is a good rule of thumb. It's 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke's here. Your car questions coming up after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. This is the program where we answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions. The guy who will do that is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the auto repair and service industry for more than 30 years, and as you know from listening to his monthly shows here, he knows what he's doing. So give us a call, 800-348-2551, if you have a question. 800-348-2551. You may also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, a couple of open lines right now. There may not be in a few moments. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ray. Good to be here.
One of the things we talk about endlessly on this program is oil changes, and you've been reading up on the subject.
Yeah, well, it's so important, and times have changed, and oil change intervals have increased. Particularly by the manufacturers, and we've spoken about this many times, there's some pressure on the EPA to keep the oil in the engines longer, yep. So there's less pollutants out there. But what we see in the repair end of it is the damage that the dirty oil does to today's engines, and it's way different than it was 30 years ago,
really?
Or even 20 years ago, because the old school engines did not use the motor oil for things that today's engines do. And today's engines use the oil as a hydraulic fluid to make changes to the valve train for optimal power, emissions, performance, the whole deal.
Right.
And it works quite well. And what I constantly run into is failures of these components when the vehicles are older in life, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100,000 miles or more,
yeah.
Big repairs. And I just read an article about a BMW's system, and I didn't finish the article, but basically it said the majority of the problems are from insufficient oil changes, deposit sludge formation, causing all these things to go haywire. So you got to take it, you got to kind of split the middle with when the dealer or the manufacturer says, don't worry about changing oil until every 10,000 miles, but yet you own a car with 110,000 miles on it, you take that car to that same deal, and they say you need $2,300 worth of Valvetronic repairs, and you say, well, what happened? They say, well, you didn't change your oil often enough. And then you say, well, we did it by the manual.
Well, you've heard we've done shows where, you know, we hear from listeners who say, gosh, the dealer sort of shamed me.
Yes, yeah. And I usually just try to cut the intervals in half, because if they're at 10,000 miles, do it at 5. If they're at 75, do it at 3, 35, 4, somewhere in that range. And
Logically, I'm having trouble understanding why, and I guess if it's governmental pressure, that's one thing, but for automotive manufacturers to say, oh, yeah, you're good for 7,500, and they're seeing more problems because people went 7,500.
I think they try to make their vehicles seem like they cost less to maintain.
Yeah.
So if you can, and the oil changes are more expensive now. These synthetic oil changes on a car that holds maybe 6, 7, 8 quarts of oil are $100 or better.
Yep.
Even no matter where you go.
Yeah.
So part of it, I think, is to keep the maintenance cost down.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and let's head right to the phones. And Ellen in Catskill is first. Ellen.
Hello. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. On your recommendation, I had the brake fluid change. And at that time, they discovered on my Subaru 2006 that brake caliper was frozen and it was dangerous to drive, and therefore they changed it. I wanted
The connection
to know is I previously had 4 tires replaced. And about 4 months prior to that, I had an inspection.
Okay. I think we get your point. Your connection is pretty bad, Ellen, but I think we can understand.
Yes, yes. The question, I think, is the brake fluid change guys discovered a sticking caliper. Was it possible that the oil change or the service guy and the tire guy didn't catch that? And the answer is it's very likely that caliper probably wasn't sticking back then. And or if the car goes in for an oil change, for example, if the technician doesn't give every one of those wheels a spin as they walk by them, you wouldn't be not necessarily finding a sticking caliper.
Mm-hmm.
And some stick way harder than others. Some wheels you can barely turn by hand. Others are just starting to give resistance.
Yeah.
So when we do a service and the car's on the lift, we always give every wheel a spin. We give them every wheel a shake just to make sure there's nothing dangerous or unsafe going on
there.
But
I think she said she had the car inspected and it wasn't caught.
Same thing. If you didn't necessarily give each wheel a rotation on the lift to turn it, it may not be something that stands out or a guy would always discover,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Okay, Ellen, your connection's bad, but I hope that was a good answer for you. 800-348-2551, the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Denise in Menands. Denise, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a 2013 Honda Fit 5-speed, and every once in a while when I go to change gears, and I release the clutch and have my foot on the brake, something is squeaking. I don't know which one it is. I've had manual transmissions before, and usually if the clutch is having problems, it just kind of dies. It doesn't squeak. Could this be clutch or could it be brake?
Well, at what point do you hear the squeak? Is this on upshifting or downshifting, did you say?
Mostly down.
In other words, slowing down, and now you're bringing it down into the next lower gear as you decelerate?
You know, I really don't pay attention to that part of it.
It's important to try to determine at what stage of your drive or shifting you're hearing the squeak, but pay attention to the sound that the pedals are making and just see if it isn't a squeak that's coming from inside the car from your pedal area or if you think it's outside engine transmission area.
Whoa.
The pedal area is not a big deal,
not
right?
Really. No, I mean, that sometimes just requires some WD-40 type of a spray to calm a squeak down that's inside the car. Just put your ear on it when it occurs and try to determine whether it's in the cabin with you or outside under the hood with the engine.
Okay.
And that'll kind of tell the tech which way to look if you're interested in going further with it and solving it.
Oh, I'm going to have to. And there's no rhyme nor reason to it. As far as I can see, it's not temperature, it's not weather conditions, it's very sporadic.
Yeah,
it's only when you shift?
Yeah.
I think what you need to do is be able to reproduce the sound and then take it in and ask somebody to go with you, and you drive and they listen.
But, it could go days and days and days, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
I risk the female going in with all the mechanics saying it makes a noise and having them go, this woman says it's making noise and there's no noise.
Well, it's very important, and I do this all the time to try to go with the customer and reproduce it so we both hear the exact same thing. That's the key to finding out what's wrong with it.
Okay.
All right.
Is there, even if we couldn't reproduce the sound, do you think them looking at that could possibly see what might be going on?
A test drive with a technician would determine if the clutch feels normal, that it's not excessively, there's not too much free play, it's not slipping, it's engaging at the right points, and the shift linkage and everything works okay. You could kind of confirm at that moment that everything at that time is normal and don't be overly concerned. Let's wait until the noise reoccurs. I think maybe you could do that.
Okay.
All right, Denise, good luck. How many times, Gordon, have you driven with someone who says, oh, God, I hear a noise, and then they can't reproduce it when you're driving it?
Quite a bit, and I totally understand it because that's the way it goes with sounds and noises that are intermittent. When it's grinding or scraping constantly, that's the easy one.
Yeah.
You know?
The squeak as you release the clutch, though, I don't know if I've ever had a standard car where eventually that didn't happen with the pedal.
That's what I'm thinking. If it's inside the car and it's your pedals, that's no big deal.
Yep. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. We'll take one more here before the next break. Bess in Gilderland. Bess, you're on.
Yes. Hello, Gordon. I have a 2011 Subaru Forester with 80,000 miles on it now. I'd like to shop around for a used or new Crosstrek. And I'm wondering if at 80,000 miles, it's time to start shopping, or can I wait a bit longer to make the 2011 Subaru more attractive?
Yeah. Your current Forester with 80,000 miles on it has a tremendous amount of life left in it. A lot of people love to get that as a used car. So knowing Subarus, and we see a lot of them, I wouldn't be at all concerned that you're in need of another car. If you desire one, of course. The Crosstrek's a totally different car than the Forester.
Yes.
The shape's different. The size is different. It's the newer generation Subaru. It's smaller. So you definitely want to try one out to make sure it's a car that you're comfortable with if you like the Forester and are happy with that exact car. So I would go try one and first of all see if you like it. But if you want to know if that Forester is done yet, no, not at all.
Yeah, I kind of figured that I wanted to put it on the market as a used car at the best time for it at $80,000 or yes, like 80,000 miles, or I could drive it to 100, or my other Forester I drove it to 214.
Yes,
I know that the life is in there, but with regard to putting it on the market now at 80,000.
Yeah, it's worth more now, of course, than it will be a year from now. So, yeah, if you're thinking about getting a car, your Forester's worth the most today.
Okay. Bess, we have to take a break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551 if you have a car question today. We'll be right back.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Capital Roots, making fresh local produce accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods. Healthy, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege. To learn more, capitalroots.org. Capital CarShare, a nonprofit car sharing network in the Capital Region, offering neighborhood transportation with a fleet of eco-friendly vehicles. CapitalCarShare.org for donations and information. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. For over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repairs, including tire pressure, exhaust, brakes, and checking engine lights. Full-service gas station, collegestreetmotors.com. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. And from Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts. Offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. That's our afternoon call-in program. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. We'll answer your automotive repair and service questions, possibly, hopefully. And our number is 800-348-2551. A couple of quick emails here, Gordon. This one came in from David in Oneonta. Good afternoon, and thank you for listening to my issue with my truck. I guess we have no choice at this point. For the past year or so, when I slightly step on the accelerator after stopping, my truck shudders as if going off the road onto the rumble strip. Doesn't do it at high speeds going down a highway, though, when the cruise control is on. Only at slower speeds below around 45 miles per hour. I had the U-joints checked. They're fine. I also had a new carrier support, a bearing replaced for about $400, but that wasn't the problem either. I'm at a loss, and it's very annoying as it vibrates the whole truck and will stay that way unless I slow down or speed up. It's an automatic transmission. That's from David in Oneonta.
Yeah, well, it's always sometimes the question is it an engine concern or a transmission driveline concern causing that rumbling or skipping? And What was that, Ray? I know you threw that away. I ask you this every time. Is it a Ford? Did it say it was an F-250 or something like that?
2009 Tacoma.
Tacoma, okay. It's good to know if you're experiencing an engine misfire that's intermittent, and it may not be happening long enough to turn on the check engine light, but a technician can go in there with a scan tool and watch the cylinders performing, and it'll pick up misfires that you may not notice or the computer may not pick up until they've done it long enough. So I think it should get scanned, and it should look for misfires,
okay,
just to rule out that the engine is not the culprit here.
I had that problem one time. It was the plugs, believe it or not.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It's, you know, coil, plug, something related to possibly the ignition on this truck.
That would be a relatively cheap fix.
Yeah, not bad.
All right, this one is from, who's it from? Doesn't say. Please comment on the large Class 3 hitch for my van versus the smaller size. I have an opportunity to pull a full-sized concession trailer and want to get the right hitch size.
Yeah.
That's from Adrian.
What happens a lot of times is a hitch manufacturer will spec a hitch out for a vehicle, and they'll determine that we're just going to make Class 3 hitches for every one of these cars because it's the same size receiver, and that means they can go from the lightest trailer to the heaviest that the car will handle.
Mm-hmm.
So if that Class 3 hitch is all she can get, just get it. I mean, no problem.
All right, fair enough. All right, let's go over to the phones again, and Andy in Delmar. Andy, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks very much for the community service. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I have a 2012 Nissan Versa, and it started developing, I guess the sound I would say would sound like a propeller plane. And it's only when the car is rolling. I don't think it's CV joints because those I've had bad, that they make a real big clunking sound. And I'm thinking it.
Oh, we lost you there. Go ahead. Are you still there, Andy? Oh, boy.
I think I got enough of what he's concerned with.
All right, listen on the radio then.
I was going to ask him a few questions about speed and when the car does it, but my gut feeling here is a wheel bearing.
Ah.
That's what I'm guessing. And the wheel bearing, a lot of people will refer to it as a old propeller plane or a single engine plane going overhead. And the faster you go, the sound increases and it decreases with speed decrease. It changes.
Yeah.
And that's the speed of that wheel bearing, and the ball bearings in there are starting to go bad.
Could it be as simple as a tire that's not fully inflated, or?
He would probably be aware of that, but tire noise, and that's a very good point, Ray. Tire noise is extremely common, and a lot of people will confuse or think a noisy tire is a failing wheel bearing. So you're right. We should be concerned with both things.
But either way, a wheel bearing, not the end of the world.
No, super common.
Yep.
Changing them all the time.
All right, let's go over to Ben in Williamsburg. Ben, you're on.
So I got a two-part question. So I'm basically managing two vehicles with well over 100,000 miles on them. I work in sales, so I put 1,000 miles on my week every two weeks.
Yeah.
And so they're both in pretty good shape for body condition. One of which I'll ask about, just the primary, is a Toyota Highlander. It's an 02. It really just nice style body on there. It doesn't look too old. It's just, you know, paints in good shape. It's not basically not embarrassing to drive. That one's got 150 on it. And, I keep up with regular maintenance. I always keep up with oil changes. But I guess the question is, like, as cars start to get, you know, creeping up towards 200, and, you know, I guess 200 is the new 100 for mileage, for 1,000 miles. And so, I'm just wondering what kind of issues would I be looking at when you, like, I don't know, when you consider a car dead, I don't know what to expect. When do you call it quits when your car still looks good, but, you know, is it going to be the transmission that puts it in the grave, or is it going to be an engine issue? I did change the timing belt in there a couple years back, and I'm just looking for tips to prolong the life on a car that I think is definitely worth saving. And I guess that applies to my other vehicle too. So whatever your answer is for that, what should I be looking at for this maintenance? I heard the other day, I did a little research, and one of the sites I was looking at said you know, look at all the hoses, you know, see if the hoses in the engine are looking cracked. You could do preventative maintenance there and change out hoses, even if nothing's broken per se, but that, you know, that you do yourself a favor to change out hoses. And I guess so things like that, I guess I wonder if you had any insight.
Okay.
Yeah. Believe it or not, hoses don't fail very much anymore on just about everything. It used to be a super common thing.
Yeah.
Always, you know, gas stations had a whole rack of radiator hoses. And the Europeans started providing super good hoses, and those cars never needed them.
Yeah.
And now almost everything, sooner or later you might need a hose, but that's not top of the list anymore. What I would be concerned with on a vehicle that is getting some age in addition to mileage is rust and corrosion happening underneath the car that you can't really see. The vehicles look good on the outside for a long time, but when we raise them on the lift, we see very rusty components like subframes and control arms, brake and fuel lines to some degree on older vehicles because they were made out of steel. Now there's a lot of plastic lines for fuel and more corrosion-free brake lines, but those are a major concern still. Automatic transmissions, they all have a lifespan. Some last longer than others, and that's why the fluid maintenance is very important. And a lot of the Japanese cars have a very good fluid maintenance program, changing those fluids at a periodic time before they get filthy and beat up.
Yeah.
But that Highlander is a good vehicle, got an excellent track record. So I don't think I'd be overly worried about too many things, but it'd be good to get a good evaluation of the shape of the cars in.
That's really a philosophical and financial decision, too. How much do you want to sink into it as time goes on?
Right. And when is the tipping point? I wish I knew. Because yeah. If the transmission blows and they say it's $6,000, yeah. You just hit it. And then you say to yourself, why did I get rid of it 6 months ago?
I can tell you what it is for a North Star engine. Yeah, head gasket. Sure. Let's go to Chris in Lake Placid. Chris, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2016 Subaru Outback, and the electric tailgate does not go up all the way. You push the button on the back tailgate, and it goes up maybe a foot and a half, but you can push it up the rest of the way. I'm just wondering if that's a lubrication problem or whatever. When you pull it down or when you push the button for it to go down, it goes down fine.
Well,
it's got about 40,000 miles. It lives in snow country, so
yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's warm or cold.
Yeah, that's kind of young for stuff like that, but and those the motor and the mechanisms are pretty well out of the elements on those vehicles. But I guess any moving links or joints having to do with that lifting mechanism should be lubricated and try it. You know, get a flashlight on there and spray them with a light penetrating oil, unless it's just something wrong with the system or getting weak. You said you can push it open without any big resistance, though, to get it opened up all the way?
Well, it doesn't go up easy.
It doesn't?
You know, it's manageable. I mean,
yeah.
It's not like, you know.
Right. I mean, in extreme cases, which I very much doubt, if you had a hinge issue, a rusty hinge or a hinge issue with the tailgate, that motor's only so strong.
Right.
So if it met the resistance of a bad hinge or a rusty hinge, it wouldn't damage the gate in itself. It would probably fail safe. So I would look at all moving parts, hinges and mechanisms, and see what they look rusty, get them all lubed up, and see if that frees it up for
you.
It's
a 2017, though.
16, I think. But still, that's not that old. You know, if this car was 10 years old, I'd say, yeah, you got some corrosion problems.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Chris. We appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. And Daniel in Wappingers Falls. Daniel, you're on.
Yeah. Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering about the change intervals that you've been talking about with oil. What about the spark plugs and coils and wires? Mm. They recommend 75,000, but my mechanic said he had trouble taking out the spark plugs.
Yeah.
So what do you recommend for that?
What kind of vehicle?
My previous one was a Suburban,
yep.
But my current one is a Honda Pilot, and it's got 70,000 miles on it.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, because spark plugs today last incredibly long. And part of the reason is that the engines are running much cleaner and much more efficiently, and the spark plug technology has advanced greatly due to the metals that they're using on the tips. They're using iridium and platinum. So the plugs have the potential to last much longer. And in some cases, they're changed at 100,000 miles. And we've taken them out at 100,000 miles and marveled at how good they look.
Yeah.
But some spark plugs come out very hard. And if you own a Ford Triton V8 engine, those spark plugs were of a different design. And they had the tendency to break off inside the cylinder
head. Oh, that's awful.
Can you imagine that? That's just as bad as the North Star issue.
Yeah.
So horror stories about those engines.
So you have a special tool that gets those out?
Well, it's a super long, deep socket, but Ford has a procedure, and it's awful, and it doesn't always work.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, I would certainly change spark plugs by the recommended time. And let's say they say do them at 60. You're really not going crazy doing them at, let's say, 50.
Yeah.
But some vehicles, they never give trouble removing them. So it's hard to say car by car which ones they are, but they should be definitely changed at their change time or maybe a hair sooner.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, the guest, and Chris in Albany is next. Chris.
Hey, guys. I have a 2000 Jeep Cherokee, and I have the infamous death wobble that I've gotten fixed about three different times.
What's the infamous death wobble?
Every Jeep owner I've talked to has mentioned it and says that I'm going to get it eventually, but I've gotten the control arms and the lower ball joints replaced, and then I took it to my shop, and he said he couldn't find what was causing it. It seems like every bump I hit, if I hit it, especially with one tire before the other tire, like at a curve, it just starts, the whole thing shaking. It starts small, and then within about 2 seconds, my whole steering wheel's wobbling.
Yeah.
And I have to pull over and stop.
Yeah. You heard of this?
Oh, I've experienced it.
Really?
And it is a death wobble. These go into such a violent shake that you think that the front end is going to come out from under the vehicle, and you're fearful of a crash.
Good Lord, that's a terrible design flaw.
Yeah. That vehicle happens to have a solid front axle in it, which is very rare nowadays.
Okay.
And what we see happening a lot of the time, and it gets overlooked constantly on Cherokees and Grand Cherokees of that vintage, there's a unit called a track bar, and that bar runs from the front axle up to the frame of the vehicle on an angle, and that has a bushing on one end and a ball and socket on the other, depending on the year and the application. But anyway, they're linked on both ends, and those wear out, and they're hard to check, and they are one of the biggest causes of the death wobble.
Can you fix it?
Yeah, just replace it. Yeah. And the steering stabilizer or the damper, it's like a shock absorber on your front end. If you're familiar with that steering damper.
Chris?
Not well enough.
Okay. Yeah, that's the other key item, the steering damper or steering stabilizer. It's like a shock absorber. And even if it looks good, it has to be disconnected and tested. And if it gets replaced, get the best and heaviest one you can put on there.
Okay.
And those two things are the key to that wobble.
You know, I drove for about 6 or 8 months, early 2000s, maybe before 2005. Cherokee.
Yeah.
I thought it was one of the best things I've ever driven.
They were a very durable, simple vehicle.
Yeah.
They lasted forever.
They had a stiff ride, but
they did.
I like the truck-like ride.
Two solid axles, front and rear. But it was an old school four-wheel drive design, but it was very durable.
Yep. All right, let's go over to Brian in Red Hook. Brian, you're on.
Hi. I have a 2008 VW Rabbit, and I have to replace the radiator on it. I was just wondering if you had any tips on what you have to do. I know you have to take off the whole front bumper, and I'm not sure if you have to remove the headlights and what else you have to do.
Yeah, it's buried in there.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any real shortcut to doing those. And they don't fail very often, but, you know, it's certainly possible that, that it is. Is it leaking, obviously? Is that what your concern is, or is it running too hot, or what's happening?
It's leaking out of the one side. I can see it weeping off of the one side where the metal meets the plastic.
No, I think so, just taking that front end off is going to gain you access to it. It's just time and taking a bunch of stuff off and putting it back on.
Yeah, do you know, is there a drain for the radiator?
No.
Or do you have to remove one of the lower hoses?
You just take a hose off.
So for regards to the hoses, there is a hose clamp, but the new radiator that I bought, you know, it has some O-rings with it. So it looks like there are some plastic housing with a almost like an E-clip.
Yep.
That connects the radiator to the radiator hose.
Yep, they couple together.
Yeah, so you just have to loosen up that or push that clip one way in one direction, and it will come off.
Yes, it's like a quick disconnect, and just be really careful with that plastic retainer. And we were just speaking earlier about hoses. Hoses last so long nowadays. You those hoses are probably fine on that car to keep on there.
Right. So removing that coupling is not that big of a deal?
No, you just have to gain access to it, clean it all up very nicely, and get that clip out of there and just wiggle it and twist it. And the good thing is you're replacing the radiator. So if you have to get a little rough with it, you can, because if you damage your radiator, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you make a point.
But if you're taking it out and you don't want to damage the radiator, you got to be super careful.
All right, Brian, we have to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. Home stretch, straight ahead.
Support for WAMC comes from Boyden & Perrin Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993. Offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Specializing in distinctive eyewear featuring new styles for 2018. Eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, Massachusetts. Now open for the season with garden supplies, organic fertilizers, mulch, cold hardy annuals and perennials, pansies, flowering trees, shrubs, and more. Whitney'sFarm.com. And from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, presenting the works of Rockwell Kent, who traveled the world but lived and worked in the Adirondacks. Through July 22nd, HydeCollection.org for details.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551. The number. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. One email here, Gordon, and then back to the phones till the end of the program. This one is from Brenda in Amsterdam, who says she has a problem with her 2004 Chevy Monte Carlo. Recently, my car slid in snow and stalled out, and I've never been able to restart the car. Battery is not the problem. Had it towed home, where a friend ran a computer check, got an error saying torque converter is stuck open. My question, is there a way, hopefully simple, to close it or reset it?
Yeah, that's interesting. That code will not affect the engine starting, that torque converter code.
Really?
Yeah, that's transmission code. And that's not an uncommon code for cars of that vintage. But that's not why it won't start.
Hmm.
So it's going to take some troubleshooting to find out what went wrong. You know, the slide in the snow may or may not have contributed to it. If she went over a bank into the ditch and ran over a bunch of things, who knows what could have happened underneath the car. But
so you can't even make a guess.
No, I mean, we see fuel pump failures quite often. Crank won't fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's more common on a car like that than an ignition problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to be checked out further.
Okay, very good. Back to the phones. And Carolyn in Clifton Park, you're on.
Yes, this is Carolyn. I have a 2014 Corolla Toyota, and my service was supposed to be at 51,000. I'm up to 53,000, and 7/39.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, is it going to jeopardize my car?
Well, when you say service, I'm sure oil change, among other things, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you should get it taken care of, because you're over, whenever your oil was due to be changed, you're now 3,000 miles roughly past that, or 2,000, 3,000.
Yes.
So if they set your last change interval at 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000, you got a lot of mileage and time on that oil. At the very least, I would have the oil checked to make sure the level's okay, and then that will tell how dirty the oil looks. But, yeah, you definitely should get that accomplished, for
okay.
sure.
Carolyn, thanks a lot for the call. And over to Jonathan in Sheffield, Mass. Jonathan, you're on.
Hi. I have a Kia Spectra 2009, and I just went over 100,000 miles. Just looking for any tips or tricks to keep it going longer, and what the outlook is for that make and model, if you know.
Yeah. What year is it again?
2009. Kia
Nine.
Spectra.
Okay. Yeah. I would be concerned
it's,
as we
it's
spoke.
A standard. It's a stick, and I had new brakes and two new tires.
Sure.
Recently.
As we said earlier in the program, I'd be concerned on a vehicle that age, particularly of its origin, because we see Korean cars rusting pretty badly.
I did have a bad rust issue where a control arm rusted
right.
through, and the axle ended up breaking because I was
yes.
That's.
I always recommend anybody that calls in. You know, at this, we've had a couple already today. Call about what to do when a car gets older.
Yeah.
Get somebody's eyes on it for corrosion issues. Brake lines, fuel lines, subframes, control arms, which you've already lived through. Better check the other one unless they replaced
yeah,
them both.
The other one was replaced as well. I replaced both.
Yeah.
So I had new brakes and new control arms.
And the other thing is check your manual for maintenance, and anything that has not been taken care of at this stage should get you
That's
should get caught up.
Doing.
Yeah.
All right, Jonathan, thank you very much for the call. And Andrew in Kingston. Andrew, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I have an opinion question, basically. I have a 2007 Saab 9.3 that I absolutely love. It has 243,000 miles on it. It's running very, very well. I have started to look for another car, perhaps. And going online, I went on a site called Car Gurus, and they do have other Saabs available. Now, given that Saab no longer makes Saabs, is it advisable to get another one, or what is your opinion?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because in a practical sense, as more time goes by, these cars will be more difficult to fix and get parts for. Right now, there's a lot of maintenance parts available, but I don't have a lot of Saabs that come in anymore. We used to have, you know, a good handful of them, and it already started becoming hard to find certain items. It was much more difficult, and I had to search out more suppliers to find stuff for these cars, and that's going to only get worse. So if you love the Saab and you're a Saab aficionado, then if you love the car and you want to deal with maybe some waiting times and parts down situations, they were a really good car. But in the normal world,
a very solid car.
Yeah, yeah. It's too bad that what happened to Saab did.
What happened?
Well, General Motors bought them in the 90s, and I think I think back then the Saab people had big eyes, saying, "My God, we're going to have a big daddy of a company that's going to let us do everything we want. Our engineering department's going to go crazy, and we're going to make the best cars in the world." GM got in trouble in 2008 and 2009 and said, the government said, you guys got to downsize. He said, okay, see a Saab, see a Saturn, see a Pontiac, you know, and away they went.
I mean, Saturn I can deal with, Andrew, thank you. But Saab, I mean, that's iconic.
It was a great niche car. They had a good loyal following.
You know, it's so funny. I was in the oil change place with my wife's car over the weekend. I didn't even know that Saab was gone. I was talking to a lady who said, you know, I want to keep this on the road for as long as possible.
Yeah.
But she said, I've heard they're going to come back.
No, they tried like crazy. A wealthy race car aristocratic family member was going to buy them and start building them on a abandoned air base, a guy named Koenigsegg. And it didn't work. And then a major parts supplier in Europe was going to get them going. That didn't work. Now it's too much time has passed.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
All right. Over to Carol in Catskill. Carol, you're on.
Yes. I have a 2006 Saturn View. It has 260 some odd thousand miles. It rides beautifully. There's nothing wrong except the engine light goes on. I've changed everything from the gas tank cover to the coils to the whatever. Still goes on.
Okay.
It goes off periodically in the warm weather, and then it gets chilly outside. It goes back on.
Yeah. Do you know what the code is? Is it the same one every time?
Yes.
Do you know what it is? What the description of the code is? Okay. When people speak about gas caps and all that stuff, it's usually an EVAP code, which has to do with keeping the gasoline vapors contained.
Yeah.
So they don't evaporate and go out into the atmosphere. That's one of the most hair-pulling codes there is to determine. And it can actually be anything from the gas cap to the engine and everything in between.
Oy.
But what I've found in a lot of cases is corrosion on the seal between the gas cap and the filler neck.
Huh.
The tiniest bit of rust on that will create what's called a small leak. So we clean that area up with like a Scotch scouring pad so you're not going crazy, you know, grinding it up and sanding it. It needs to be perfect. And then if you've already replaced the gas cap, I always put a little film of I put a little film of synthetic grease on that gas cap seal. And that will seal that tank up.
So that would be the first step?
Yes, and it cures a lot of them. And it's easy. I would try that.
It's unbelievable. My husband had the same car, different color, exactly the same thing. Oh,
yeah, boy. It's not uncommon at all. It's a super common trouble code.
Well, good luck, Carol. And let's talk about codes for a minute, Gordon. Is there a simple way for the average person to get those codes read without going into a mechanic and saying, read the codes?
Well, you know, there was a time where a lot of cars allowed you to extract codes yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Your Cadillac
did
it.
Sure, absolutely.
Chrysler products did it for years where you would not start the engine. You'd cycle the key from off to on three times. You know, bang, 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 the last time you leave the key on, and the check engine light flashes you. It gives you flashes.
Yep.
And you write those down. And those flashes, you can look them up, and now you can do it on the internet and find out what the code is.
Yeah, our Chrysler would do that too. But for instance, the Saturn, Carol's car.
Yeah.
Are they all? Is there a trick for all of them?
To read the codes?
Yeah.
No. In fact, very few offered you that option. But for semi car gurus or car guys, you can buy your own code reader.
Now I've heard that when you do that, and they're not that expensive, that they won't read all the codes.
They will read all emissions codes because the government mandated all car makers to provide emissions codes to any scan tool.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go deeper into transmission and air conditioning and stuff like that. But if you buy a $59 code reader at an auto parts store, you can plug that in. It'll
to
tell
what?
You,
what do you plug it into?
There's a diagnostic link under the dashboard, and it's a standard connector.
In all cars?
All cars built after 1996 have the same exact connector.
Okay.
And you can read your own codes, and it will also allow you to clear it, but that doesn't mean you fixed anything.
But it won't. But again, if it's an engine issue or transmission, it's not going to show.
If it's a code that the government feels could be an emissions contributor, it will show.
Oh,
and some transmission codes go in there, like that code we just had a few minutes ago, that torque converter.
Yep.
The government feels that could be a pollution code, and that's why that transmission code was available to that Monte Carlo.
Very interesting. All right, over to Greg in Voorheesville. Greg, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a 2016 Nissan Altima, and I recently went on a business trip, and I rented a 2016 Nissan Altima. And I noticed I'm one of those guys that drives around looking at tire pressures on my, you know, on that little digital display. Must be my OCD. Anyway, I noticed that this car was in California, and the tire pressures were all around 40 PSI. And when I got home, you know, my tire pressures are all around 30, 32 PSI. And I'm wondering, it's the same exact car. Why is it different?
The rental car agency probably either fills them up higher because they're out on the road constantly and they don't check them all the time. But the spec is on your door jam on your car.
Right.
And let's say your door jam says 32 PSI.
It does.
It's not a bad idea to go a couple pounds over. It's not harmful. In fact, you can go up to the maximum inflation pressure listed on the tire if you're carrying a big load, lots of people, luggage, or towing a little trailer.
Yeah.
So the rental car agency prices, we're going to put these to the max to get better tire life, better fuel economy. And then if we don't check them for 6 months, they're not going to be going soft or flat on people. But I think it's just whoever put the tire, added air to the tires, put too much in them at the rental car place.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Greg. We appreciate it. And over to Tammy in Valencia. Tammy.
Hi. I have a 2008 Corolla, and this winter my trunk lock stopped working, and also the flip on the side of the driver's side. My concern is it's just an inconvenience. It's nothing like I absolutely have to have it, but I would like to have it back, and my concern is how much will it cost so I can gauge how much to save.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Back me up again. It's the what are the two issues again?
The trunk lock stopped working.
From inside the car?
No, from the outside.
Oh,
also the flip on the inside by the driver's door.
So both are not working.
Correct.
You can't get the trunk open.
Exactly.
Oh,
can you fold the back seat down?
Yes.
So if you fold the back seat down, there may be a lever, a release in there to get you out. In case you shut the trunk and there's a child or a person in there or
right.
whatever.
Right.
A lot of cars have an emergency release. So the
yes.
first step is to get the trunk open, and then I would be very suspicious that the latch mechanism and where the key goes in is all corroded, and with some good penetrating oil, spraying those things up and exercising them may totally fix it.
So it's a 10-year-old vehicle.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, I would dare say it's a corroded latch.
Excellent.
So that's what I would do.
All right, Tammy.
Thank you. You made my day.
Well, let's hope it works. Let's quickly go to Nick in Saratoga. Nick, you're on.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I got a 2014 Chevy Silverado looking to take a 6,500 to 7,000-mile road trip. It's got 80,000 miles on it currently. And so just wondering, what are some of the preventative things that I should take? We'll be pulling a trailer with it. What are some of the things that I should look at before embarking on a cross-country trip like this?
Yeah, good question, especially if you're towing. Transmission fluid service, very important. If it's never been done, it's not too late. That would be a key item with trailer towing for sure. Also, brake fluid change, if that's never been done, because you're towing a camper or a trailer and you're going down some long passes and it's going to be hot, you could get some super hot calipers. And if that fluid is contaminated with moisture, which is what naturally happens to brake fluid, you could have a brake fade issue. So,
not a good plan.
No, I saw brake fluid change, transmission service, and whatever other maintenance is due, now would be the time to get that taken care of. Air filter, all the usual stuff.
Yeah.
Get your tire pressures set properly, and if you've got a lot of weight in there, go higher, you know?
All right, Nick, thanks a lot. I guess we'll have to leave it there. By the way, Gordon Fricke, I was in Hoosick Falls and saw Barbara and Fricke.
Oh, boy.
That's one hell of a nice Volkswagen bus in that window.
Did you see that?
Oh, my God. What year is that?
66.
And is this something that you've just worked on, or is it just a showpiece?
Interesting story. We have like a minute, probably.
Yeah, we got about 35 seconds.
My father-in-law was friends with a guy in Hoosick Falls who bought that vehicle new in 66.
Yep.
He only drove it to the state fair and around. So he got to the point where he wasn't driving it anymore. I saw it out. He parked it out, started parking it outside. I drove by that for 10 years under a tree. And my father-in-law, about every 6-8 months, would ask him about it. He finally let it go.
Oh, nice.
We had to do a ton of work on it.
It's beautiful.
It's only got 43,000 miles
on it. All right,
listen,
man, I'll trade you my 2005 Chrysler Town & Country for it, straight up.
Oh, boy.
I know. You can think about it.
We got to negotiate.
All right, Gordon Fricke, thanks for being here. Support comes from Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned for over 50 years, offering annuals, perennials, nursery stock, organic fertilizer, and advice, hadleygardencenter.com. And Colby Attorney's Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939, colbyservice.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for stopping by today. Thank you for listening and for a ton of great calls and emails. Zach Malloy has been our engineer. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. Deb Malik took your calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, the good folks from Rolling Rock Farm in the Berkshires return with their latest salts and seasoning, and they are certifiably wonderful people. Can't wait for that. Right now, stand by for news.